Philadelphia modernity. The Philadelphia of the mid-20th century was a city as conflicted, as class-conscious, as racially stratified as that of its colonial, revolutionary, Civil War, and post-Reconstruction eras. Black Philadelphia was burgeoning in its population, fueled in large part by the Great Migration, which sent wave upon wave of a black rural flood into urban centers like Pittsburgh, New York, Chicago, Boston, San Francisco, Seattle, and Oakland. In these centers were established de facto black quarters, areas of containment and isolation, policed by law and social custom to minimize and restrict black movement, mobility, and dispersal. Ghettos are not natural growths like bunions. They are legal constructs that are the fruit of the long-held beliefs and practices of segregation, and they survived the alleged death of segregation through restrictive covenants that forbade the selling of millions of units of housing to African Americans. This legal restriction had its equally effective corollary in social and customary practice by the pricing of real property at rates that were prohibitive to the vast majority of the ghetto population. Black Philadelphians came of age with the deeply felt knowledge that they could be beaten, wounded, or killed by cops with virtual impunity. As the police force were predominantly white, they seemed like foreigners in a dark village who treated their darker fellow citizens with the vehemence one reserves for an enemy. For ghetto youth, this took the form of the police using the maddened self-hatred and regional antipathy between youth of various gangs to foment yet more hatred and violent reprisal. One favorite tactic they routinely utilized was to pick up a few youngsters from one gang, place them in a patrol car, and drive them to enemy gang turf, let them out of the vehicle, and scream curses and insults against the enemy gang to the young men left standing as the cop car raced off at breakneck speed. Their choices were few and unenviable. Stand and fight against the swarm of sworn enemies, or run like the devil, hoping to get to neutral or safe territory before they got badly beaten, shot, or worse. It was into this milieu that the Black Panther Party came into being in Philadelphia and in the many cities with large urban black populations. It was late spring of 1969. With the renting, repair, cleaning, and painting of the storefront at 1928 West Columbia Avenue, the local party would have its first formal presence. Odd apartments and private homes had sufficed previously. A reliable place where people could contact us. Time seemed to have conspired to await our coming, for the clear air, the bright sky blue, the very essence of the season of new life was upon us. No sooner had we finished painting the walls, panther powder blue and black glaze adorning the moldings, affixed a few posters to the walls, Malcolm X, Che Guevara, Huey and Bobby armed, and used pressure-sensitive letters to inscribe the inside of the fronting glass, the black capital gold edge letters, Yitrep, Retnip, Klaup. Then people began appearing at our door. What drew them was the bold lettered message blaring from the other side of the window, Black Panther Party. That seemingly simple message drew in the young, the old, and those in the middle, from the cautious to the curious. Students came in, anxious to sell the paper. But to have an office was not enough. The fledgling organization had to do something. The date is May 1st, 1969, and between 15 to 20 of us are in full uniform of black berets, black jackets of smooth leather, and black trousers. As we assemble to demonstrate for the freedom of the imprisoned Black Panther Party Minister of Defense, Huey P. Newton, who is facing murder charges stemming from a car stop and shootout in Oakland, a rousing chant of Free Huey is raised. Leaflets are distributed to passersby, and we are able to inform some people of our presence and how to contact us. Several of Huey's articles are read over the megaphone, and before long, we have a somewhat rousing rally on our hands. Some of the excited kids from the nearby Ben Franklin High School cut their classes to attend the rally, and several papers are sold. Captain Reggie Shell reads from Huey's In Defense of Self-Defense, which notes in part, quote, "The heirs of Malcolm now stand millions strong on their corner of the triangle, facing the racist dog oppressor and the soulless endorsed spokesman. The heirs of Malcolm have picked up the gun and, taking first things first, are moving to expose the endorsed spokesman so the black masses can see them for what they are and have always been. The choice offered by the heirs of Malcolm to the endorsed spokesman is to repudiate the oppressor answer and crawl back to their own people and earn a speedy reprieve or face a merciless, speedy, and most timely execution for treason and being too wrong for too long, unquote. Cameras went off like popcorn, but we had no real idea who the mostly white photographers were. We assumed they were the press, but some had the unmistakable air of cops about them. It never dawned on us that some were FBI agents building a file on us. Mostly, it was because in an age of global revolution, it didn't seem too extraordinary to be a revolutionary. For didn't America come into being by way of the American Revolution? We got up early and didn't go to sleep until late. For most of us, party work was all that we did, all day into the night. Our little branch blossomed into the biggest, most productive chapter in the state and one of the most vigorous in the nation. A year after our rally, our branch sold 10,000 party newspapers a week and had functioning party offices in West Philadelphia and Germantown. The party nationally sold nearly 150,000 papers through direct street sales and paid subscriptions per week. The party was literally growing by leaps and bounds, both locally and nationally. From our original 15-odd members in May 1969, a year later, virtually 10 times that number would call themselves members of the Black Panther Party of Philadelphia. We spoke at anti-war rallies. We attended school meetings. We met with high school students. We met in churches. We worked with gangs and provided transportation to area prisons. Everywhere we went, we brought along the 10-point program and platform of the Black Panther Party as a guideline for organizing efforts. By any measure, we made an impressive beginning. You've been listening to an excerpt from We Want Freedom, Philadelphia Modernity. This is its author, Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.